Can look with me at Isaiah chapter 2. Isaiah 1 is in this first five chapter section of Isaiah where he really just gives a whole summary of his message kind of timelessly. And so chapter 1 was really mostly a condemnation for Israel's sins. He really exposed them, really humbled them. Now look with me at chapter 2, the word which Isaiah the son of Amoz saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem. Now it will come about that in the last days, the mountain of the house of the Lord will be established as the chief of the mountains and will be raised above the hills. And all the nations will stream to it. And many peoples will come and say, come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, that he may teach us concerning his ways, and that we may walk in his paths. For the law will go forth from Zion, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem, and he will judge between the nations, and will render decisions for many peoples. And they will hammer their swords into plowshares, and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation will not lift up sword against nation, and never again will they learn war. This is a pretty prominent passage. Almost the very same thing is in Micah chapter 4. And it just has a lot of insight. So imagine a mountain range. And you take the mountain that God's house is on, and you just start raising it higher and higher and higher. That mountain towers over all the other mountains. It becomes the tallest, highest mountain there is. And that's the Lord's mountain. And then you see what is kind of an amazing picture if you stop to think about it. You see all the nations streaming up to the mountain. Now, that's kind of an odd picture, because what way do things usually stream? They normally, gravity flows them down, and you see all the nations flowing up to this really high mountain. So that's really kind of contrary to gravity, and it makes us stop and think about what he's looking at. So, in a sense, this is almost Acts chapter 2. Now, if you think about Acts chapter 2, what did Peter preach? Peter preached that the mountain was elevated, that Jesus was exalted to the right hand of God, ruling and reigning. Peter preached the kingdom of God being exalted. Now, the mountain, a lot of people say the mountain's the church. Well, not really. The mountain is the kingdom of the Lord. The mountain is the rule of Jesus. The church are the people who stream up to the mountain. That's exactly what you see on the day of Pentecost. People from all different places streaming up to the mountain. Now, granted, they were all Jews. Before long, it would be people from all the nations streaming up to the mountain. This is kind of the inverse of, say, Genesis 11 and the Tower of Babel, where everybody was scattered out. Jesus now unifies all these diverse peoples as to one. And these are the people of the Lord. So I've tried to look at this and think, okay, we want to be a part of these peoples, part of these nations. What are the characteristics of these people of God? Or I like to call them mountain people. You know, we need to be mountain people. And what does it take to be in the mountain people? Well, I identified five things in this passage that it takes to be one of the mountain people. First of all, you come to the mountain. You come to Jesus. You flow up to the Lord. Now, I'm thinking of this as like, man, the Lord must have some supernatural magnetic attraction to bring this stream up to the mountain. You kind of have to go up the current or whatever. But it's the people who come to Jesus who are the mountain people. The second thing you see in them, they invite other people. Look at verse 3. And many peoples will come and say, come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the God of the house, at the house of the God of Jacob. So if you're a mountain person, you're trying to get other people to come up to the mountain with you. Mountain people are evangelistic. They don't hoard the mountain for themselves. They understand what a blessing it is to come to the Lord's mountain, and they try to get other people to come with them. The third thing is, they come so that they can learn his ways, that he may teach us concerning his ways. Now, you're not one of the mountain people if you don't want to learn. I mean, that's a part of the whole thing. We're pretty ignorant. And we come to Jesus to learn his ways, to find out what his will is, to find out what his pattern is, to find out how we're supposed to live. If we think we know it all, we're not mountain people, because mountain people come as a blank sheet, ready for the Lord to teach. But it's not just like their whole goal is how much can they know, so they can say they know a lot. The next line is, and that we may walk in his path. So they come to learn, but they come to learn so they can walk, so they can live right. You're mountain people. You're applying what you learn. You're letting what he teaches you decide what you're going to do. And the fifth characteristic is, they're peace-loving people. Now he says that the Lord will judge between the nations and will render decisions for many peoples. And look at what they're going to do. They will hammer their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. So what they do is they destroy the means of war and turn them into agricultural implements. Now that same phrase is reversed in a passage or two that talks about, you know, getting ready for warfare. But they're laying down their arms. They're turning their arms into means of production. And they don't lift up sword again, nation against nation. So the means of war are destroyed, the practice of war ends, and they don't even learn war anymore. The mentality of war is abolished. And the way they do this is they let the Lord make the decisions. They let him be the judge and the arbiter. And so as mountain people, we seek peace with each other. We remember the passage in Isaiah 11, we haven't gone there yet, but you probably have heard of it, where the lion and the lamb graze together and all that. And the whole idea is you take people who, without the Lord, are at each other's throats. They hate each other. They do every manner of violence against each other. In the Lord, he brings those people together where they dwell together in peace and harmony and unity. That's mountain people. They don't have means of war anymore. They don't practice war. And they don't even have a mindset to fight. They have a mindset to work together in the Lord. So, I want to be mountain people. Come to Jesus, evangelistically encouraging other people to stream up to the mountain with me, coming to learn so that we can walk and have peace. Those are the people who come to the mountain. Now, in this picture, those people are primarily Gentile people. The nations are flowing up to the mountain. Remember, in Isaiah's day, the people of God were the Jewish nation. But he's showing that when God's mountain is raised up, it's going to be all these non-Jewish nations who are flowing up to the mountain. So what about the Jews? What about God's previously chosen people? How are they doing? Look at verse 5. Come, house of Jacob, and let us walk in the light of the Lord. For you have abandoned your people, the house of Jacob, because they are filled with influences from the east, and they are soothsayers like the Philistines, and they strike bargains with the children of foreigners. Their land has also been filled with silver and gold, and there's no end to their treasures. Their land has also been filled with horses, and there's no end to their chariots. Their land has also been filled with idols. They worship the work of their hands, that which their fingers have made. He exhorts the house of Jacob to follow the example of the nations and come and walk in the light of the Lord. You know, sometimes it's the people who weren't God's people who motivate God's people they better straighten up and start doing what the Lord wants them to do. That's exactly the picture here. The nations flow to the mountain, and the Jews have gone to pot. Look at what they're filled with. They're filled, verse 6, with influences from the east, with worldly wisdom, with pagan ways, with all of the influences of the non-God-serving world around them. They let themselves be filled up with that. You know, that's a problem for us. We end up getting way too influenced by the world, by other people. That's a danger. We start thinking like they do. We start acting like they do. We start talking like they do. We've got to be really careful that we're not filled with influences from the east. Are we being more influenced by the Lord and by His people? Or are we being more influenced by all the non-Christian world around us? That can be a terrible thing for us. They're filled in verse 7 with silver and gold. They're so interested in material possessions. And that begins to dominate people. That's what fills them up. Instead of being filled with the Lord, fill up with material things. Verse 7 also, they've been filled with horses, and there's no end to their chariots. Horses and chariots represent like human strength, represent like their own way of carrying out warfare. They use horses and chariots like we use guns and bombs and, you know, artillery and all that kind of stuff. And so they were filled up with their own means of trying to protect themselves in their own strength instead of trusting in the Lord. And then they were filled, their land was filled with idols. Now, this idea of turning to idols and trusting in them doesn't make a lot of sense. They worship the work of their hands, that which their fingers have made. You know, their hands, but he breaks it down, it's what their fingers have made. I mean, it's like, look, you made this idol with your own hands and fingers. And then you turn around and bow down to it and think it's going to save you. You know, we realize we don't have the ability to face life without help. So we manufacture our own help and then serve it. That really is so absurd. But that's what God's people were filled with. So the nations are streaming up to the mountain. And God's people are filled with influences from the east, silver and gold, horses and chariots, and idols that they themselves made. Look at the contrast. So the nations were drawn to the Lord, while God's people were drawn to the world, to the influences from the east. What a contrast, right? The nations were seeking the spiritual benefit, while God's people were seeking material wealth. The world was seeking the peace God gave. That's what the nations were seeking. While the Israelites were filled with horses and chariots. The nations were seeking the true God, while the house of Jacob was inventing its own gods. You see how point by point he's making the contrast. It's the very people who didn't know the Lord who've come and flowed up to him. The people who did know the Lord are filled up with all these other things that are supplanting the Lord in their life. That's what Isaiah sees. That's what God's revealing through Isaiah. And I wonder if we were analyzed and we were examined, where would we fit into that? Would we be like the nations flowing up to the mountain people? Or would we be like the Israelites filled up with all these other things? So look at verse 9. So the common man has been humbled, and the man of importance has been abased, but do not forgive them. Enter the rock and hide in the dust from the terror of the Lord and from the splendor of his majesty. The proud look of man will be abased, and the loftiness of man will be humbled, and the Lord alone will be exalted in that day. So those who bow down to their idols are humbled. They're brought low. And when you are exalting yourself against God and you face the wrath of God on the day of God, you try to find a bomb shelter. You know, enter the rock and hide in the dust. You know, find anywhere you can to hide from the terror of the Lord and from the splendor of his majesty. God is going to bring down human pride, human loftiness. Here's the thing. When anybody seeks to raise themselves up, What are they doing? They are trying to compete with the Lord. Yeah, that doesn't work. You know, the Lord alone is exalted, so anybody else that tries to raise themselves up, God is going to bring them down. You know, so the mountain of the Lord's house grows taller, and all the surrounding things are flattened down. And so if I'm one of these guys who's trying to lift myself up, you can be sure the Lord's going to bulldoze me right back into place. I mean, it does not work to try to exalt yourself. Remember what Jesus kept saying about that. He who exalts himself will be humbled. So look at verse 12. And look at the things that are brought down. For the Lord of hosts will have a day of reckoning against everyone who is proud and lofty, and against everyone who's lifted up, that he may be abased. And it will be against all the cedars of Lebanon that are lofty and lifted up, against all the oaks of Bashan, against all the lofty mountains, against all the hills that are lifted up, against every high tower, against every fortified wall, against all the ships of Tarshish, and against all the beautiful craft. The pride of man will be humbled, and the loftiness of men will be abased, and the Lord alone will be exalted in that day. Now, he talks about all these things that are going, that God's wrath, God's day of reckoning is going to be against. All the things that God's going to bring down. What do all those things have in common? They're all tall, right? Cedars of Lebanon, oaks of Bashan, lofty mountains, hills, high towers, fortified walls, ships of Tarshish. He takes everything that's high and brings it down. So pride is out. Exalting ourselves, promoting ourselves, lifting ourselves up. Look at what that does to that. And yet how many times do we struggle with trying to get in the limelight, get attention, promote ourselves, brag on ourselves, draw attention to ourselves, dominate, superintend. You know, we want to get as high as we can and look down on everything around us. That's a terrible idea, because those are the very things God brings down. God lowers everything that man raises up, no matter what it is. It's kind of a sobering thought. In verse 18, but the idols will completely vanish. Men will go into the caves of the rocks and into holes of the ground before the terror of the Lord and the splendor of his majesty when he arises to make the earth tremble. You want to hide anywhere you can. You go into caves, you go into holes. You want a bomb shelter. You know, in any way you, because the Lord comes in his wrath. Anything. Get me away from the Lord in his wrath. It wasn't just Jesus in the New Testament that talked about the wrath of God. You know, the Old Testament has a lot to say about that as well. And it's terrifying. You don't want to face that. Now, I love verse 20. This is really kind of, I would have never expected this in the Bible. In that day, men will cast away to the moles and to the bats their idols of silver and their idols of gold, which they made for themselves to worship, in order to go into the caverns of the rocks and the clefts of the cliffs before the terror of the Lord and the splendor of his majesty when he arises to make the earth tremble. So they're taking their idols and they're throwing to the moles and the bats. Why not to the bears and the lions and the tigers or something? The moles and the bats? And you think about it. What do those animals have in common? You know, the moles and the bats are just creepy, despicable little creatures. I mean, there's nothing about much less photogenic than a mole or a bat, right? I mean, you know anybody who's got a pet mole? Now, somebody probably does. Who knows? Or a pet bat? I mean, you know, I know some people who've got some pretty creepy pets. But moles and bats are just, you know, they stink. You know, they're about like an overgrown rat or something, you know, we'd say. So if you're taking your idols and you're throwing them to the moles and the bats, That's like, man, I don't want to have anything to do with these idols. Get rid of them. Throw them to the moles and the bats. Throw them to the most despicable, vile, ugly creatures you can find. In that day, that's what they'll do. In that day, men will cast away to the moles and the bats their idols of silver and their idols of gold. Now you think about it. When they made those idols, they invested a lot in them. Silver and gold idols. And they put a lot of time and work into it. You know, they hired some craftsmen. And now, throw them to the moles and the bats. Anything they can do to get rid of those idols in that day. You see that idea? They hate them. They don't want to be even close to them. They don't want to have anything to do with them. In that day, get away from the idols. So I want to ask this question. Shouldn't we judge everything by the test? What will I do with it in that day? In that day, will I throw it to the moles and the bats? Is that what I want to do with it? You know, in that day, the things I cherish so much now and I value and I really love and I really want, what are they going to be worth to me in that day? All those things that I just really invested myself in, and, you know, I cared about so much, what am I going to think about it in that day? You know, about 5 minutes after I die, you really think it's going to matter? What kind of a car I drove? What kind of house I lived in? What kind of money I made? What kind of job I had? You think it's going to matter how beautiful or ugly I was? You think it's going to matter how well I performed on my job, in my sport, in my classroom, you know, et cetera? There's all kinds of things that 5 minutes after I die won't mean one thing. And if I could, I'd throw it away to the moles and the bats. The question is, how will all of those things fare on that day? What will I do with it then? And then he says in verse 22, stop regarding man whose breath of life is in his nostrils, for why should he be esteemed? Now, here's the problem. We put too much in men, whether other men or ourselves. We put men in the center of things. And, you know, it is remarkable how confident we feel about ourselves. Even our ability to just control things. You know, how many times do we just decide, here's what I'm going to do, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this. We got it all planned out, we got it all, this is what I'm going to do. Yeah, right. If you live, and if the Lord enables you to do it, we are incredibly fragile. We don't feel like that. I've lived 60 years. By the grace of God, I wonder how many times I came about that close to getting killed, in traffic or all kinds of ways. But it just feels like, hey, I can do anything I want to. One rapidly moving piece of lead can just take my life away like that. No delay whatsoever, just gone in a second. Or he says, stop regarding man whose breath of life is in his nostrils. Now you just think about it. What does it take to kill you? Close your nose, stop up your throat. Now, it's easy to close your nose. I'd grab anybody's nose and close it. I mean, there's no... And really, that opening down there in your throat, not very big. I don't know what the diameter of that thing is, but it's not much. You stuff that, you stuff the nose, you're gone. What, 5 minutes? Maybe less, I don't know. 10 minutes? I'm not sure how long you have to not breathe before you're gone. That's all it takes. That is all your life is based on. Is the air you're able to take through those little beady openings in your nose and your throat. That's it. Life is nothing more than that for any single one of us. And then we think we're tough. We think we got everything. Oh, I can handle this. We are not more than that. And you realize that very breath of life comes from the Lord. We didn't give that to ourselves. Genesis chapter 2. So the breath of life that we're dependent on came from God, God can take it back, and it's all just what we take in through our nose and throat, and that's it. You let that throat swell up, you know, get an allergic reaction or something, and it's over. We are nothing. That's this chapter. The thing that we've got to look at is the mountain that's raised up. Look at the Lord and flow to Him, because everything that raises itself up and everything that is raised up will be brought down. And all the things we trusted in, like those idols of silver and idols of gold, will want to throw them to the moles and the bats on that day. There is nothing that's going to be valuable on that day other than my relationship with God. Don't put too much stock in men, whether it's you or some other man. Man is nothing more than the breath in his nostrils. It's an encouraging chapter. We can flow up to the mountain. And it's a discouraging chapter. If we try to lift ourselves up, we are in big trouble. I love that chapter. I think that's very helpful, to the point. That's what I got to say. And so tonight, if you need to come to the mountain, that's the first step. You have to flow up to Jesus. Bring others with you. Come to learn. Come to act. And come to live in peace with your brethren. If you need to obey the gospel, we encourage you to do that. We'll stand.